Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. I'd like to introduce today's sponsor, TopTal. Finding and hiring talented developers is really, really hard, but TopTal makes it easy. TopTal's team of engineers meets with you to understand your needs and handpicks just a few developers from their network for you according to your needs. They've been so successful with this that they now offer a no-risk free trial period for all engagements. If you're not satisfied, you don't pay. Go to toptal.com/podcast today.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Nastor.
We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and I thank you so much for joining me again. I am your host, John Nastor, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a media executive, father, and Canadian entrepreneur with a background in journalism and new media. He's the founder and president of Apparent Media Company and Kid Doodle TV, a commercial-free video subscription service for kids that allows parents to control exactly what their children watch. My guest founded these companies to make the world of digital media a safer place for kids. My guest and his team also make a positive impact on families everywhere by giving back to the local communities that they work in. Now, let's hack Mike Lowe. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, TopTal. TopTal's team of engineers meets with you to understand your needs and handpicks just a few developers from their network for you according to your needs. Once you interview a developer, you can start working with them on a full-time, part-time, or hourly basis for as long as you need. It is completely flexible. Thousands of companies, including Airbnb, JP Morgan, Zendesk, and more, have turned to TopTal when they needed developers because TopTal allowed them to hire rapidly, hire with confidence, and hire only the best. Go to toptal.com/podcast today to start working with the top-tier developers at TopTal. Listeners of Hack the Entrepreneur will receive 1 week of TopTal development credit in addition to a no-risk trial period of up to 2 weeks. Again, that's toptal.com/podcast now to sign up. Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we have another very, very special Canadian entrepreneur. I love this. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely my pleasure. All right, Mike, let's jump into this. As an entrepreneur, Mike, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
I tend to fall in love with my ideas and then I try to kill them. So I really, as an entrepreneur, you're always looking for the opportunities, those cracks of light that you see that big companies or what's not being seen in the market. And, you know, when you find them, it's very exciting and emotional. And again, it's like writing a song that you think is going to be a hit, but then, you know, you have to be an adult and say, okay, let's take the emotion out of it. And even though I'm in love with it, is this something that could actually be a product or a venture that would be ultimately successful and return, you know, investor money, some recoup. And ultimately that's it's a very fine line. I meet with a lot of entrepreneurs, younger entrepreneurs that have just a ton of passion, but sometimes they blindly fall in love with their idea and miss a lot of the big points that ultimately would force those ideas to not become successful in the marketplace.
Nice. And when you say you attempt to kill them, is that sort of before the market kills it?
Yeah, exactly. I really want to look at it. And, you know, when you have to be able to be a critic of your own product, you have to be able to move yourself away from your idea and really try and poke holes in it. And the good news is if you can't kill it, then it's probably an idea that's worth pursuing and putting, you know, obviously your life commitment to.
Nice. I like it. So it's interesting because with the songwriter analogy where you think that you write a hit song, it's also, I'm from music, so I take this, but it's interesting now because I haven't thought about it in this way, but I'm wondering because oftentimes like look at the Rolling Stones and people have written songs that they thought would never be the hit.
Yep.
And that's the song that's like their biggest songs ever. Can this, so what if you kill an idea because you're sort of in your own head, and I know you try and move yourself away from it, but do you think that some ideas need to go to market to find if they have a place?
Absolutely. You know, there's always, you know, the absolutes in this world are seldom absolutes and in gray. And you've pointed out a very good situation where even, you know, if I look at something, I go, man, I just believe in it and I think it's real. But you could find 10 reasons why it shouldn't be, you know, real or why you shouldn't pursue it. I think ultimately sometimes there's still a leap of faith that you just have to put it out there. And from my experience in being an entrepreneur, one of the things that I have and throughout my history is that we create products with minimal viable products and get them into the market just for that very reason. Because ultimately, you never really know until you get it out there and expose it to the world and get the world's feedback to tell you whether or not this is something that's good or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. All right. So let's go back now. Kidoodle is what you've been, or Kidoodle is what you've been around for the last almost 3.5 years. But let's go back before that, because there seems to be this time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize that they have this calling to like make a difference in the world, or they find that they simply cannot work for somebody else anymore. So could you tell me where you fall in between those two and when you discovered this about yourself?
You know, it's been very easy. I grew up in a very entrepreneurial family. Actually, ironically, my father was in the music business, and I grew up in recording studios and back of stages and bars. So I had a very entrepreneurial life where it was, you know, from a very early age, I learned that you had to kill what you would eat. And, you know, at that point, I grew up with a very free environment where my parents would encourage me to go out and fail. And ironically enough, again, I wasn't musical, but I was athletic and I had a very good hockey career. I ended up winning a national championship in junior and ultimately wasn't good enough to make any real money at it. So, you know, I always just sort of fell into this space where I was my own boss. And even when I was in my late teens and early 20s, my whole goal was to simply work jobs as I could to accumulate enough cash so that I could go into my next travel adventure and then, you know, see another part of the world, which, you know, for me is a very good parallel to entrepreneurialism, where you ultimately are seeking a freedom and new experiences and choices. And I think, you know, the easy thing for me is that I just recognize that having a normal routine is absolutely deadly for me. I can't bear it. And I need stimulation. I guess it's maybe a dopamine crave. But ultimately, for me, it was always sort of just a path that I knew I had to work. Of course, I've had lots of jobs working for people. And I was a very hard worker, but a very terrible employee, because I always thought I could do something better. So, you know, as most entrepreneurs that you meet, I just, you know, it's just a calling that I always sort of agreed with, even, you know, as far back as I can remember. I always had these dreams about creating something new or opportunities or bettering something. And ultimately, as I had to face the real world and pay rent and food bills and everything else, it just came that I think it was a little bit more efficient for me to try and be creative and try different angles on things and make my own way, as opposed to fall in line and live a normal routine.
And learning to kill what you would eat. I like that. And you said that your parents sort of pushed you and tried to teach you how to go out and fail. So like, can you think of a way that they would do this? Because this is something that I don't think it's something we're teaching our own kids. And I think that it's something that's so necessary, because there kind of is a generation sort of us that came up like that. But
Yeah, you know, my mother's really key to this, because I remember a conversation. I was playing hockey when I was 16, and we had gone to we went to the national championship as well. And I remember when we didn't win and hockey was over, 2 days later, she said, okay, you need to get a job, or you need to be doing something that's going to better your life. So if you want to live at home rent free. And so she really always reminded me that, you know, if I wanted to be at home, or if I wanted to eat their food and live under their roof, that I had to be doing something that was progressing my mind in the forms of an education. And she was very liberal in the sense that she understood that education didn't necessarily mean going to school, but she wanted me volunteering, or wanted me, you know, planning a trip or doing something and trying to seek out experience for myself to be able to understand who I am and what I am. So, you know, growing up in that space from my mother's standpoint, she, you know, was very, very adamant that I couldn't just sit idle, that I had to be doing something or else pay rent and everything else. So she was a good motivator, you know.
So I guess you're going to do this to your kids?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think, one, it's really the only way I know how to grow up, but with my two sons, The important part for me is giving them experience and a toolkit and helping them build. I would never want to give them a free ride. Ultimately, they're going to be their own men and I want them to choose their own destination. But life is a journey. And I think the only thing I could really provide is experience. And by being older and more experienced, I think to put them in and encourage them to go out and fail in various situations is ultimately going to be the best teacher.
Yeah, I agree. And it definitely is an entrepreneurial sort of mindset, though, the whole just keep going, keep doing more stuff, find ways to like.
Yeah, it's a curse. It's, you know, it's obviously not conducive to nice sleeping habits and, you know, low stress lifestyle. But I guess, you know, for those people that are seeking out something new, it is. I've got a lot of mentors that, you know, just sat down with over dinner or a glass of wine and just asked them. And, you know, the common thread throughout, you know, everybody, no matter what level of success or age, is that there's always that risk. You know, there's always that fear of failure, always that fear of not completing or doing the job well. So it's going to be an eternal lifelong motivator.
Yeah. And have you started businesses before Kadoodle?
I have just on a small scale. I started my own creative agency and started my own film production. I had some TV shows that we won't mention here that I developed that, you know, got quite further far down the lane, you know, just again, as being a younger guy in my 20s, you know, a lot of times I was inexperienced that caused me to fail. And just other times it was just circumstances, you know, as every person who ventures out, there's always an element of luck too. You have to be, you know, a bit of the right place at the right time, and you need some wind at your back to be able to help you cross the finish line. I'm sure every, you know, I can't recall anybody who's been very successful. I mean, and what I mean by successful is they actually have gone out and done it themselves. You know, they didn't inherit a business or they didn't just take over something that was already successful, but really to start something from ground up. Everybody always talks about that there was just some good points along the way where they just had some luck by their side to help them make it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And then you mentioned mentors now. At what stage did you start seeking out mentors?
You know, early on, I picked, again, my father from the music business. I had a lot of really good friends in the Los Angeles area. And I'm sure they got tired of me always asking to go out for dinner. And, you know, and of course I couldn't afford nice dinner. So I'd take them to the average budget place. But I've always, again, that's part of just my father introducing me to his friends and saying, you know, you should go talk to them and you should ask them how they got to the place where they are. And I've always found that very successful people are always willing to take the time out of their busy schedules to be able to mentor hungry young adults. And so I use that to my advantage. And one of my best mentors is actually on my board now. He's a fellow named Jim Lights. He's the president and CEO of the Dallas Stars. He's got a fabulous sports career, but you know, I just sit down with Jimmy and we talk, you know, whether it's hockey, shop talk, or just all the experiences that I have. And I just love hearing his stories because that experience and that, you know, I can just absorb it. And that's one of the things that I encourage all the young entrepreneurs that I talk to too. And I try and practice with myself is trying to be very accessible to younger people that are hungry. If they don't show any hunger and they just want something given to them, then I don't have much time. But to those kids that are out there, and I would say like myself, that were willing to go and do anything to try and learn as much as they could, then I always try and make time.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent. All right, Mike. So at the beginning, you told us that your one thing is that you tend to fall in love with ideas and then you can kill them off. Now, every expert tells us about the 80-20 rule. So do 20% and get 80% of the results. Do what you're good at and delegate the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us something in your business, Mike, that you are absolutely not good at?
Day-to-day organization of my schedule.
Fair enough.
I'm terrible. Our communications director keeps my life in order, and I'm so grateful for her because I tend to get lost in the moment a lot of times. You know, I'll be sitting with our marketing group or our product group and I get excited. I consider myself much more of the creative mind, and you know, sometimes I just completely lost and drop things, and which is a pain in the butt when you've got a flight in an hour and a half and you forgot that you thought it was, you know, 3 or 4 hours later. So, you know, that's one of my weaknesses. I really focus and try and motivate people to be better than I am, you know, because I, again, what I look at my weaknesses are organizational skills that are needed to be disciplined in a business. And so therefore I try and surround myself with personalities that are definitely disciplined in order and organization.
That's smart. You said that was a communications director?
Yeah, I know. She's known her for lifelong friend almost. I know it's always nice to, you know, people say never mix friends in business. Well, I do the opposite. I tend to try and find people that I believe in. You know, I want them to be friends, although, you know, we have to be very clear what business represents to relationships. But, you know, from my standpoint, that business is part of life. It's not, I can't just segregate it and say, hey, it's only business. It affects time away from my children and my family. And obviously, You know, it's about, you know, how do we get together as a team and for one, accomplish a business that's successful that can end up paying our mortgages and our basic bills. And then two, obviously, you know, capitalize on the opportunities at hand and try and expand the business into not only the most successful financial organization that we can build, but also, you know, try and do something that's got a real good focus on giving back. And to that point, you know, if I'm building it with people that I like and that have positive attitudes and attitudes that, you know, they're not just, it's not just the job, but rather they're trying to build a legacy, then I find that the opportunities that come our way are much more grand as opposed to just simply, you know, having a job and doing a day-to-day job.
Yeah. How many people work at Cadoodle now?
Overall, with all our contractors, we have just over 40.
Wow.
And so it's Canadian and in US contractors and employees, all really unique, dynamic. I don't hire by resume. I like to meet them. I like to try and ask them questions. Again, my schooling, everybody asks, why did I go to journalism school? And for me, it was the shortest period of time in which I could go to school to sound the smartest. And then the second, it was ultimately teaching me how to really find what the story is, to try and look beneath the surface to see what really is going on. And I think with hiring people and working with people, I like to find ultimately people that are motivated and willing to take risks. And I've never gotten angry at anybody or upset with somebody that said, I was just trying to make this happen. I was trying something new. The thing I really don't like is when people only come up with problems and never offer a solution because they just don't want to put themselves out there. I always say, if you come up with a problem, even if your solution is, I don't have a solution, you have to be able to say to the group that, you know, ultimately here's the problem, but we need to work on the solution. So I find that, then I find, you know, people get at that point, then they form much more of a cohesive team than just individuals.
That's interesting. It's interesting your like management style, because you're the president of the company as well as the founder.
Yeah.
But you haven't obviously been the president of a company this size before.
No, we've grown organically with it. I'm very lucky. Our executive chairman is a Harvard MBA and a former partner at Bain & Carlyle Group in private equity space. So I get daily lessons from him, and I'm very grateful that I've got the adult in the room to ultimately help us guide us at a very, very high level of corporate discipline. And so, you know, we built a very free and flexible space here, but ultimately there are, you know, we are running a business and we have to make sure we deliver and execute on the business plan to make sure that there's success ahead of us.
Yeah, that's excellent. That's excellent. All right, we're going to move on to projects.
Sure.
I believe, so projects is a loose sort of term, which can mean anything you want, but I believe you guys just released not that long ago, I saw a piece for it. And what was that called?
Family Moments, I think.
Yeah, Family Moments. So that's a new, like, big sort of project that you decided to take on.
Yeah.
What, at this point, how does Family Moments as a new direction for Cadoodle, how is it something that you guys decide is worth putting all your time, effort, money, and resources into?
One, when we built the company, it was under a thesis. And the thesis was that digital media is changing. Radio changed, music deliveries changed, book deliveries changed, newspapers have changed. From our standpoint, we knew that as the connectivity and the bandwidth increased, then obviously video is changing, which we've seen from Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and YouTube over the last few years. And we were firm believers that it was going to change. And in our original thesis, though, we challenged what's the future of content mean? What does content mean in the future? And one of the things that we quickly found through our research and our users is that everybody's got a smart device. And on all those smart devices, they have a camera and the ability to record video. One of the problems, though, is that there's typically a limited amount of storage on that device. And so therefore, once you start taking a few videos or have a lot of apps, the ability for you to actually record video is limited. And a lot of great moments have been missed. I know with my own eldest son, I missed his first steps. I missed some of the things that you wish you had captured forever. And we just said, you know, coming back from our audience, that not only do we want it, they want some aid and help in that. We found that moms weren't really comfortable using Dropbox or iCloud. They're, you know, they were losing files. They didn't know where it was going. They wanted a really simple, elegant solution to be able to not only watch on their phone and tablets and PCs, but also on their TVs, et cetera. So that's the process of what 18 months is, just getting a lot of data. Our product team, our chief product officer, convinced me that ultimately there's also other applications. One of the things that you'll see coming in announcement very shortly is our big partnership with Digicel in the Caribbean and working to help eradicate a lot of illiteracy in that region. And one of the things that really pushed our decision overboard to make this Family Moments happen was the ability to use it in classrooms. For instance, teachers can record lessons. And in a lot of the developing international worlds, a lot of those kids can't be in those classrooms every day simply because maybe they live too far, or they have to work to sustain the family, or, you know, just there's a million different reasons why. But if we can give them a connected device and the teacher can publish daily lessons online and her classroom get automatic updates where they can watch it wherever they are to be able to watch it anytime over and over again, and then have the ability to analyze that so the teacher knows exactly what student watched what, and the ability to test after that through a digital testing process. Really, from our standpoint, we just saw that as a huge opportunity to not only better the world, but also as a product to differentiate on the consumer level. And so we're, you know, the Kadoodle itself looks today is like it's Netflix for kids. Really, we have a much grander vision, and it's involving much more education, much more serving international markets and kids in general, and as well sports. We, you know, I grew up playing hockey as a good Canadian, as we most of us boys do and girls do now. But the reality is that, you know, I remember my mom standing in the stands recording with an old VHS camcorder, and then you'd come back to the hotel room when you're traveling, or you come back home and watch the game. And so we're finding that too. You go to games now and everybody's got an iPad or an iPhone and they're recording the game, and we just simply want to use it. Let Kadoodle be a tool for kids to be able to watch themselves and improve really the opportunities for them to learn and, you know, grow in a positive manner.
Yeah. And how far out with something like Family Moments, like how far out are you planning sort of features and growth of it? And how, like, and how much are you sort of basing on real-time sort of feedback and data from the users?
From our beginning, we built our thesis was we had to have a platform. It had to be global in scale, and it had to have a very fast sense of velocity to it. The market changes so quickly now. And one of the things that we have an advantage over us as a small company compared to the bigger media companies that we're competing with is that we can ultimately pivot quicker. And we built our platform with that in mind. And so our team is a very agile team. Once we start seeing some trends, we do have an element of gut decision-making in our process once we have the data. Ultimately for us, Family Moments is a very short turnaround. After we made the decision that we wanted to do it, we were about 4 months in the development pipeline, and we've got a very, very skilled team of developers. Again, right from the get-go, is I wanted to build something that really could address the market. And when you talk about real-time, you know, 4 to 5 months is sort of our outer edge to be able to meet something. If we can do it sooner, we actually do it sooner. So we have a very near-term planning process simply because the market that we're in is transitioning so quickly right now. And as we expand globally here in the next few weeks, and then as we move forward with additional partners outside of Digicel, it's really important for us to be able to have our platform agile enough to meet individual needs within individual region. We'll be in with partners. We expect to be in over 50 countries here by the probably Q1 of next year. And in those, you know, you're dealing with a lot of different languages, a lot of different nuances in each society. And so we need to build a platform that was able to cope with that and deal with that with speed, as opposed to just being fixed in a big cumbersome platform.
Wow. Did you say 50 countries in the next year?
Yeah. We're actually entering by the end of this month. We'll be in, I believe the total is 35. Wow. And we do have a direct-to-consumer product that is going global. It'll be accessible globally throughout the iTunes and Android stores. But within our partnerships, yeah, we'll be in over 50 countries. Right now, about 35, and I think we're increasing that to 52 by about Q1 next year, Q2, through another partner. So
excellent. It's got to be hard for the big older media companies to compete with people like you.
Well, yeah.
They grew up so quick and so nimble.
Yeah, grew up in a knobs and switches environment, and we're digital. I mean, and you know, territorial media space typically was run by territories. It was region by region, and it was, you know, broadcast had to have, you know, move from airwaves, broadcast, big broadcast antennas into, you know, coax having to have a cable come into your home. And with the internet now, it's completely shattered all those regional territories. And we're truly entering into a global period for media consumption where, as you can see with Netflix, you know, they can make shows that are hits in many, many, many countries. And ultimately, I think that, you know, we have a thesis here that ultimately people are still the same everywhere. There's obviously a lot of different nuances that we have and different tastes, but the core, we're still human, and we, you know, we still love our family, and we still want to give opportunity to our children, and we still enjoy a great heartfelt piece of content or song or book. You know, there's quite a few things that we can say are standardized throughout the world.
Yeah. I love it. So you're definitely building beyond just a business to make money at this point, because throughout this conversation, I think three times you've mentioned legacy.
Yeah.
And you're trying to change a lot of stuff. Could you just give us an idea of what the vision and legacy is that you have planned for Kadoodle at this point?
Get-go, I can talk right through even when we were raising capital in the very early days and still how we raise capital today. It was, we needed the right capital, and we wanted patient capital that would allow us to build out over a few year period. It wasn't about you know, we're going to make a Netflix for kids and we're going to end up with a few million subscribers right away. It was rather, how do we build something that has the runway to continue on for many, many years and develop a true global business? I think today that we have, you know, brands have changed. It used to be able to have a great commercial and you could almost trick the consuming public into believing that your product was the best. Now, consumers have all the power. At the palm of our hand, we have a device that allows us to search out anything we want. And from our standpoint, we wanted to build a brand that when people did search us out, they would be pleasantly surprised that we're not just about reaping as much money as we can from kids and families, but rather we're trying to build something that has a dual purpose, both as a business to operate a successful business, to provide opportunity for content producers, to have another distribution platform to generate revenue, to create new great content, but at the same time, to be able to have a business that really looked at kids and families and drew lines as to what we would and wouldn't do to try and generate revenue from them. With that in mind, when we were, you know, one of our investors is a fellow that was a very successful businessman privately. He sold his business for over $1 billion. Then consequently won $40 million in a lottery that, you know, for him, he built a family foundation that he gave, you know, a lot of his personal fortune and of course all the lottery winnings away to be able to have a foundation that bettered children and cancer research. And so, you know, these are the types of investors that, you know, he believed in what we're doing. He believed in our statement that we're not just building another media or technology company that was to mine as much revenue as we can from the public, but ultimately that if we were looking at as far as building a dominant brand globally, that we needed to incorporate a new way of doing things. And it started from every different piece of the business, whether it was our investors to our executive group to the corporate mandate, that we really believed that if we took the time to build something that was quality, that at the time when we started moving to scale and people would find out about us, that we would have this extra push because we built a brand that was unique into a space that is typically, you know, big public companies that are quarter by quarter and need to drive revenue as much as they can. So it was one of the advantages, again, as an entrepreneur in a small company, you need to find your advantages everywhere you can. And from our standpoint, we typically looked at the weight of our competing companies and said that if we can build a light brand that's family friendly, that really is transparent, I think that it sets us up for a better viral word of mouth opportunity once we start getting out and really marketing the product.
I love it. It's such a great vision and you're definitely building the team behind you to like realize this vision. All right, Mike, this has been a lot of fun. I really, really enjoyed this. We've got to talk about your business, but could you specifically tell the listener where they can go find more out about you and maybe they could even reach out to you if they had more questions?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. The business is, the head company is called APMC. It's a parent media company. We named it because we wanted to birth lots of babies, lots of products. Mm-hmm. Our first product is kadoodle.tv. You can just search it in the iOS store or in the Google Play store. Just kadoodle.tv, KIDOODLE.TV. Website is kadoodle.tv as well. More than happy if anybody's got additional questions, please just send an email to info@kadoodle.tv as I believe, or support or help at kadoodle.tv. And I'll make sure that the social media guys and the guys who handle all our customer response will definitely forward it on to me. And I'm more than happy to respond to any questions that might be available.
Excellent. And there's some information about him on LinkedIn as well.
Yeah, absolutely. With a funny looking picture that people keep on telling me, it looks like I'm posing for some terrible tabloid type book in the grocery store. And I have to say, I will change it once I get a chance. So don't be funny.
Oh, that's excellent. I'll link to Kadoodle TV, APMC, as well as the iOS store in the show notes for everyone. And I'll track down an email where you can reach them. So again, Mike, thank you so much for joining me and thank you so much for doing what you're doing. And please keep doing it because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
Thanks, John. I'm actually jumping on a plane back to Jamaica now where we're officially launching some of our education stuff for the Jamaican market. So really exciting times.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks. Take care, John. Bye.
Well, that was a lot of fun. As you probably are aware, if you've been listening for a while now, I have a soft spot for musicians and Canadians. I guess it's because I'm a musician and a Canadian. I don't know. But still, Mike is doing some really, really cool things. And again, I love when people attack and go after massive industries. They just go for it. And they tackling big things like Netflix or YouTube. I love it. I love the ambition. And I think that we need to do these things. And I think that it takes people like Mike to step up and be willing to do them. So as much as I'm partial to Canadians and musicians, Mike's not a musician, I don't believe, but he's a Canadian. He still offered some really, really, really smart advice and some mindset ideas that he really has that really, really, I think, could help a lot of people. And so you're listening to this conversation and you probably noticed something that he said. Something that he said during the conversation that really, really just stood out. It was just, there it was. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
The thing I really don't like is when people only come up with problems and never offer a solution because they just don't want to put themselves out there. I always say, if you come up with a problem, even if your solution is, I don't have a solution, you have to be able to say to the group that, you know, ultimately, here's the problem, but we need to work on the solution.
And that's the hack. Yes, yes, yes. This isn't just a hack for managing of people. Mike was talking about it in how he likes to deal with like people that work for him and sort of their, how they deal with ideas and issues. But this goes further, and this can be taken to just the solopreneur person too, in the fact that this is a mindset shift that needs to take place. The idea of external things, there's always going to be external things that are going to be problems, issues, hurdles, barriers, whatever you want to call them, that you're going to have to go through, go over, go around, do something. But to just blame that problem and say that, oh, there's this problem and it's out of my hands and there's no way I could do it. There's no way I can start this business. There's no way I can reach those customers. There's no way I can advertise on Facebook. There's no way I can get this product made overseas. And that's it. Just stop. And some people have this. Lots of people, actually. I've had to sort of remove myself from people I grew up with and some friends that have this like limited sort of mindset, not this growth mindset of, okay, yes, of course there's problems. There's always problems. Everywhere we go, there's going to be problems and hurdles in front of us. But you need the mindset of, okay, so here's the problem and what's the solution? And like Mike even says, maybe you don't have a solution right now, but that's totally fine. We don't need to have the solution right now. That's not what this mindset is about. It's about knowing that there is a solution and that you are going to find it, or you're going to go around it or over it or through it or under it, whatever you have to do. But you're not just going to be like, well, there's the hurdle. I guess I'm not getting through this one. It's not going to work. That's never how you're going to get to where you want to be. There's an answer to everything, or else you have to go around it, over it, under it, whatever you have to do, or just plow through it. I really don't care. But it's this mindset. This is the whole growth mindset where these problems are just problems to be solved, not problems to stop you from ever achieving what it is you want to achieve. Mike, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. That was fun. That was fun. Now it's time to talk about my book. No, it's not. I'm not going to talk about my book anymore right now. I will, but not right now. You know about it though, right? I am writing a book. December 14th, it's coming out. There, I'm talking about it again. Sorry, it's not what I plan to do. But hacktheentrepreneur.com, get on the email list. I'd love to have you on there. I'm writing every Sunday afternoon, something just to kick your ass through this next week and get you to where you want to be. That's my job. That's what I'm doing. It's totally free, and I would love to have you there. There's a couple thousand people on that list now, and it's awesome. I get to write to them, and you get to reply. Tell me how that works for you, what it's doing, how it helps you in any way, and it's great. My Sundays take me like 2 or 3 hours. I write it, I send it, and I get like 100 replies from people, and I get to have cool conversations with you if you join that list. Hacktheentrepreneur.com. There's multiple places to put your email address in. They all end up at the same place, my inbox. So do it. Let's do it. It'll be fun. Come on. We spend all this time together. All right. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate you stopping by. I will not take any more of your time. But please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.